Now, I'd like to start with just one thing, that this day in 2001, I was giving talks across Canada, and I went to the most marvellous place called Hamilton in Ontario, and it looks across the river to Detroit, and on the one side are these beautiful clapboard houses, and there were, it was fall of course, and these wonderful golden red orange colours, and I walked along the most marvellous sunny day to the house of the people who were going to take me to the university, and there were these black squirrels, I've never seen black squirrels before, gambling in these wonderful, wonderful fall leaves. And I just thought, God, the world is so beautiful. And I found the house, the people who were going to take me to the university knocked on the door and they said, oh, you're Felicity, it's so good to see you. And then there was a silence and they said, they're bombing Afghanistan. And we just all sat and cried. Looking behind me, I'm sort of thinking two things. One, these terrible wars now, the supreme crime, as it was described at Nuremberg, a war of aggression. Afghanistan posed no threat to us whatsoever, but the Americans wanted a gas pipeline through there, which had been refused by the Taliban only about a month before the attack, and they got their pipeline through within months. Iraq, of course, on its knees after 13 years of the embargo and the illegal bombing by Britain and America, which never had any sanctions at all by the UN Security Council. And they were bombed sometimes daily by the two rogue states on the Security Council. Lebanon, by association, another country was virtually wiped off the face of the earth. And these are the places, you know, two professed Christians, you know, they might be nutters, but they're complete confessed Christians, you know, who believe think they're going to rise up and meet Jesus in the sky if there's a nuclear war. But they wiped out the places where it all started, you know, war, where, for believers, Abraham was born, father of Judaism, Christianity and Islam. That is now an American base with the original ziggurat, a place that was built before Christ and Muhammad walked the earth, all sprayed with graffiti by the Americans. Babylon, the original part of it, the Hanging Gardens, is wiped out. Purna, where the Garden of Eden is believed to have flourished, wiped out. And one would go on and on, Karnan again, Babylon, and so on. And behind us, people, actually, I'm sure they think they're doing the right thing, but they're more cowardly in a way than the pilots who sit at 60,000 feet or 40,000 feet or 90,000 feet up, bombing, dismembering, all they see is a flash. But these people are thousands of miles away, they're not even 60,000 feet up, just following orders, and orders, I think Nuremberg would say, were the supreme crime. What we leave behind us for the people who do survive is, of course, the depleted uranium. 4.5 billion years it will remain toxic and radioactive. And scientists say that it will still be poisoning the earth when the sun goes out. So that is the whole of the Middle East, where the wind blows. And to give a very, very quick background that some of you may have heard before, but just after the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, the International Atomic Energy, the UK Atomic Energy Authority, said that they had estimated if 50 tons of the residual dust, which of course it breathed in, gets into the water table, the fauna, the flora, therefore the food table, was left in Iraq, there would be 500,000 extra cancer deaths by 2000, by the end of the century, in the region. Eventually, the upper estimate is that 900 tons was left. The Pentagon had admitted to 325 tons. There were 2,000 tons left after the 2003 bombing. And they were used in Lebanon, they're being used in Palestine. So, I mean, the whole region is poisoned. In Afghanistan, when scientists went there a year after the war and took soil samples from craters were, which had been bombed, their hands bled, their noses bled, and they bled from every orifice, and that's what was happening to people and the children who had taken shelter in those craters, but they didn't know why. But the, behind the facts are what really happened, you know, the real stories of the real people. One that sticks with me is from a bombing of Iraq, and I managed to get through on the phone to a doctor friend in Baghdad. And I said, how are you all, and what is the damage, because we're not getting anything here at all. And he said, Felicity, he said, it's a disaster. This actually was Christmas 1998. And he said, let me tell you, after telling me the catalogue of catastrophes, he said, I hope you won't be offended if I say something to you. And he said, I can cope now with operating without anaesthetics, with patients dying in front of me and children who shouldn't die because they haven't got anything to treat them with. But he said, what I can't cope with is when I get home. And he said, I swear to you, I can hear in my neighbourhood the cry of every child in every street in the entire neighbourhood. And he said, what we've done is, we're lucky, we've got a big house, so we bring all the children into our house when with the air raid sirens. They know to come to our house, so our children can be with them, and they can give each other sort of support. And he said, I hope you won't be offended if I say that when the bombing ends, he said, we're left in the dark, without the electricity, surrounded by the urine and feces from the terror of the children. Now, those children, of course, will be now a bit older. They'll probably be the kids who are trying to join the resistance. I mean, they'll be in their teens. And we are not. They're the ones that are being rounded up and called terrorists. And this is happening all over Iraq. One of the things that they used to do, and they must have had directions, they don't, pilots just don't take off from Earth and spaces and just bomb willy-nilly. They get directions from wherever. And one of the things they used to do, and some of you might have read about this, but it does stick close to my heart because it was so deliberate. Going back to their bases in Kuwait and in Turkey, they used to bomb flocks of sheep, and I'm sure it was a bit of fun, you know, let's bomb them, flocks of sheep. Because also, if you've got missiles, you can't find anything to bomb, it's dangerous to land with them. But with the flocks of sheep, they bombed the child shepherds who look after them, little child shepherds, sometimes as young as four. I remember some in a place in northern Iraq, and I was driving along, and I found this, there were all these dead sheep just flying around. Place not unlike this, just all blown to bits, with the sheep dogs there and everything. And I said to the driver, stop, what's happened here? And anyway, we pieced together the story, and it was the grandfather and the father of the four children. The oldest was 13, and the youngest was 5, and he was called Mataba. And they were all just blown to bits. And I finally met the mother and the people who had run down to try and find the pieces, the bodies. And the first man there was a young man of about, I don't know, 38, and he said how they'd been searching for them all day to bury them, you know, in the 12 hours, in his son. And then he lowered his eyes and he said, you know, to this day, he said, it haunts me because there was so little left. He said, we have the 6 graves, but we still don't know what's in them, how much is sheep and how much are the people. And I met the mother, a little tiny, illiterate, dignified woman, about 4'10". Absolutely, I looked at her eyes and I wondered whether she'd just gone blind from crying. You know, she was just milky, 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 and she just looked at me. And I tried to stagger out something totally, totally inadequate. I mean, what can you possibly say? And she'd taken a section to the graves, and she sat down on the smallest one, tired, and she just sat hunched. And she took my hand, and it was a boiling day, and her hands were absolutely ice cold. And she said, you don't need to say anything to me, but she said, I would just like to meet the pilot of that plane. And I've tried ever since to find him, because finally he did appear on Turkish television, but all the doors have slammed. But when I got back, I rang the Ministry of Defence, and I said, why are you bombing flocks of sheep? and they just went into complete remote control overdrive and said, we reserve the option to take robust action when threatened. And I said, by sheep? And I sort of bleated, it's the only word, put the phone down. I don't know how much more time I have. 5 minutes? Okay, thank you. I'm thinking too of what we're now calling, you know, the insurgency. This is not an insurgency. I left just days before the invasion, and, you know, after all those years, everybody was saying the same thing. And when I tried to be sort of devil's advocate, and we all knew it was any day, any minute, the only reason I left was because I had some tapes on me that I knew if the Americans had no chance of getting them out. And everybody was saying, you know, when I said, look, it's a fresh start. And of all political hues, it was their country. And the idea of sweets and flowers, you know, when we've been bombing them for 13 years, 6,000 children a month dying on average of embargo-related causes, not Saddam-related causes, embargo-related causes. And a Sorbonne-educated friend at Baghdad, who did a postgraduate studies with the Sorbonne, speaks 6 languages, very sophisticated. And she put it better than anybody, but they're all saying virtually the same thing. And she just looked at me, and her eyes went hard. She said, Felicity, let them come. She said, we have been defeating invaders for centuries. And she said, we have plenty of places left next to General Moreland. General Stanley Moreland, who stood in Fallujah in 1917, and said, and I quote, we come as liberators, not as invaders. They've heard it all before. And I thought of a little boy I met called Mohammed. And in 1991, so he would be, can't do the maths, yes, 26 now. He joined a neighbourhood watch, if you will, because it was an incredibly intense bombing. Because he was small, and he could get into places that others couldn't. And of course, all the men of fighting age were off fighting and being killed on the Kuwait border and so on. And he was asked by a child psychiatrist who specialises in the trauma of children in war zones, what his worst memory was. So this was just after 1991. And he said his worst memory was crawling into a building where it had been bombed, where he found the body of, and he said, a mother. And he crawled a bit further on, and he found the body of her baby. And he described, 10 years old, how he'd crawled back, and he'd put the baby on the mother's breast. And so the doctor called Magna Rangelin, and he said, so that was your worst memory? And he said, no, he said, my worst memory is the head. And he'd gone, this is the reality, from here and here, the result. And he said he crawled further on in the same house, and he found a jacket, and under the jacket he found a head. And he dreamt every night that he was handing around the head, because they tried very hard to identify people so we could borrow berries of money. But he was handing around the head to the people so they could identify it. And, you know, insurgents, I would lay money he'll be in the resistance if he's still alive. There's another Mohammed who lost his family in the Amriya shelter, and I interviewed him. He lost all his family and his baby sister, who's only, I can't remember, 18 days old, I think, and he was the only survivor. And he pulled people out, and he was about 10 at the time, and I interviewed him 2 years later, and he was so courteous. He told me exactly what happened that night, and he was so old, 12 years old. And I said, how do you feel about the people who did this to you? And suddenly he just changed, and the perspiration burst out on his wrists and his hands and his forehead. And he said, if when I grow up I'm going to join the elite guard, the Republican guard. And he said, and if I wait, if I die, I have to wait 1,000 years, I will come back and get my revenge. He'll be, if he's still alive, in the insurgency. And in response, we call them Islamofascists, we call them terrorists, we say we're going on a crusade, which says Islam is the new communism. It's not. The people who are fighting in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Palestine, they're the traumatized children of yesterday who have no reason whatsoever to love us. And we need to go out and make a friend, and that's why people like us are here. And I think it was a very telling statement from North Korea 2 days ago, when the whole world is wagging its finger and saying you shouldn't have nuclear weapons. No, absolutely, it shouldn't have nuclear weapons. None of us should have nuclear weapons. But the spokesman said, for years we've been threatened with annihilation by the United States, and we want to protect ourselves. And I think we all need to bear that in mind and go out and make friends. Thank you very much indeed.